This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for Friday, May 30th, 2008. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. And later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op in Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, USDA Secretary Ed Schaefer is headed to Rome to discuss world food strategies. Also, corn growers and the grocery industry squared off over the food versus fuel debate. We'll have these and other stories this half hour. And the Midwestern Regional Climate Center will give us the lowdown on Midwestern conditions. It's all on the Friday edition of your Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL AM 580, a broadcasting service of the College of Media at the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. 866-837-9027.
Friday afternoon, prices settled like this in Kansas City. July wheat, 802 up 8. September, 816 up 10. At the Chicago Board of Trade, July wheat, 761 and a half up 18. September, 777 and a half up 18 and a quarter. December, 799 and a quarter up 18 and a quarter. July corn, 599 and a quarter up 17. September, 612 and a half up 17 and a quarter. December 6, 26 and a half up 17. March 640 up 17. July soybeans, 1363 and a half up 40 and three quarters. August, 1368 and three quarters up 40 and a half. September, 1356 and a quarter up 34 and a quarter. November, 1354 and a half up 33. July soybean meal, 341.50 up 970. July soybean oil, 61.37 up 101. June live cattle, 96.52 and a half up 57 and a half. August, 101.85 up 92 and a half. August feeders, 116.02 and a half up 57 and a half. June lean hogs, 77.75 up 157 and one half. And those are Friday's settlements in Kansas City and Chicago. Taking a look at outside markets for you, July crude oil, 127.38 is up 76. August, 127.49 is up 68. June ethanol, 239.1 is down 1.5. July natural gas, 11.72.9 is up 25.5. The June RBOB, 338.60 is down 18.2. June heating oil, 364.82 is down 403. June propane, 169.25 is down 5. Silver contract for September, close there at 16.961, up 35 cents. And the August gold contract settled at 891.50, up $9.80. The U.S. dollar, 72.85, is down just under 12 cents, while the S&P 500 is at 14.02, up almost 4.5 points. Meteorologist Ed Kieser tells us a tornado watch is in effect for all of central Illinois and for portions of northwestern into west central Indiana until 10 o'clock central time this evening. This afternoon in northern Illinois, a mix of clouds and sunshine with a few scattered showers and thunderstorms. In central Illinois and in northern and west central Indiana, partly sunny with thunderstorms arriving. Some storms will be severe in east central Indiana and in the south, mostly sunny and warm, with highs ranging from 78 in northwestern Illinois to around 90 degrees in the far south.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Learned Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Learned Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits. Learned Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
Joining us on the telephone for a look at the futures market is Mike Zuzalo of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon, Mike. There you are, Mike.
Here I am.
We push enough buttons and we will find you.
I thought there might be a tornado coming, so I was underneath the desk.
Let's get started. Not a lot of time to talk and lots of ground to cover. Was it very much a cash-led rally today?
I don't think so much, Dave. I think it really goes back to, it was really funny to see the Newswire commentary this afternoon reporting fund buying due to month-end time things getting hit, and when yesterday it was fund selling due to the month-end timing. And you got to wonder somewhat whether these two groups, these buyers and sellers, pass each other in the halls of the Board of Trade wondering what the other one was doing. So it kind of goes back to no follow-through after yesterday's big slam down. The charts held up fairly well. The cash market did get a little bit stronger throughout the day, and I think maybe those micro factors we talked about this morning got a little bit more highlighted and underscored, especially when the new maps came out. There's another big whopper rain system coming for Monday afternoon. Now, that's not a meteorological term, the whopper system, Dave, but we're looking at another maybe 3 to 4 inches of rain for the southern half of Illinois on one of the new model runs that came out before the close. I suspect that the replant talk and this new weather pattern looking still very wet for most of next week and those models holding up probably introduced to the shorts a reason to get the heck back out, especially after yesterday. And I think the most puzzling thing to most of the farmers out there is, why did we have to go down in the first place? And that's where those macro factors come in. But on the week, these corn only down 0.75 cents. No beans actually up 1. July wheat up 9. How many weeks has it been since we've had a higher weekly close on the harvest contract as harvest starts? So that was a pretty impressive week in July wheat.
You look at the soybeans and the moves on the week. Tuesday, down 20.25. Wednesday, up 25. Thursday, down 50. Friday, up 40.25. And you end the week in the July contract for beans just down 4.5. What does all that tell you?
Well, I think it goes back to what we were assuming last week when we talked about how we thought the trend would be established starting after the holiday. And in the crude oil and the gold, it certainly has. The crude oil is going to be down for the first week in many weeks, over almost $4, almost $5 on the week in July crude. And gold's going to be down almost $40 an ounce. But in the grains, that didn't happen. And when it comes to what we do in terms of our analysis we do here in-house, it's almost as valuable, or if not more valuable, that if we miss the mark on timing, what it tells us. And what we're seeing here, Dave, is the market can't make up its mind because everything's so fluid when it comes to the policymakers. Today's Financial Times is a great example. Robert Zoellick, the head of the World Bank, came out with a 10-point plan. Point number 7 is action on U.S. and European subsidies, and he talks about the U.S.'s use of corn, quote, for ethanol has consumed more than 75% of the increase in global corn production over the past 3 years. That starts next week over in Rome. It's a world food crisis summit is how they're terming it. And so I think when you get stuff like that in the press and you have large non-governmental organizations getting together to try and figure something that we haven't had happen in 25 or 30 years, try and figure answers to, everything's on the table, and that leads to a lot of volatility and a lot of skittishness, and that's what that bean market told us. But in the final analysis, we're still tight on supplies. Argentina is not quite a train wreck yet, but another month or so of this, and it's going to be tough for them to not have a financial crisis, and it's going to be tough for them to be able to plant new crop corn and beans. So it's something to really keep an eye on, because it's getting to the point where the world markets may not put up with this too much more in Argentina and may start to punish them in their currency and bond markets.
Given all this outside chatter that we've talked about, then how much credence do we really give to the fact that the charts remained range-bound, testing the bottoms of the ranges this week?
I think it goes back to my biggest fear right now is we're friendly corn and we're friendly beans and we're friendly wheat. We want farmers to have their new crop cash sales defended. But we don't know how hard to go after the long side, Dave, because we really do still believe that if we get a good, strong rally here in the next 40 days in all three of them, we want to do some pricing because there are some big issues out there that probably aren't going to go away that kind of put the top and the lid on the market. So we don't want our producer clients and our speculators to get all bulled up in the longer term. We'd kind of rather get them a little bit more bulled up in the short term and use this move higher to defend their sales, take profit, and then come back in as a hedger as we get ready for fall, because you just can't predict what the government's going to do, and you don't know what the hurricane season's going to be. So it rolls me back to the original mindset that with the dollar coming back around, interest rates going back up, and if crude oil gets a little top-heavy here on slower demand, then the bought puts are probably the best way to go, because the tighter the supplies we have in new crop corn, beans, and wheat on poor supplies and bad weather, the better our basis should be. I'm still pretty disappointed with how wide our basis is right now.
Another way of phrasing the same question, but perhaps to get you to look at the issue a little bit differently, is does all the outside chatter that we had this week about the government and the CRP acres and food versus fuel debate create sort of a paralysis among traders where they will underplay the mindset for the fundamental values of these crops in the short term?
Yes, that's what I'm getting at. After the crop time period where you can do the most damage to supply, after we get through that time period, then what you're saying is gravity more or less takes effect because bullish micro news is offset by these macro factors that traders just can't buy into the micro side anymore. I think that's definitely something that we have to be on the lookout for, and that's why protecting the futures market in the form of the bought puts is what we're going to still recommend doing this year. We hope the next 30 to 40 days we get some good value set up so that we can hedge very wisely and very nicely.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Thanks, Dave. Have a nice weekend.
You too. Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
In agricultural news, USDA Secretary Ed Schaefer says he has a three-pronged strategy when he attends next week's World Food Security Summit in Rome. Schaefer says he wants to emphasize immediate assistance for nations with food shortages, efforts to improve food production, and stronger management efforts worldwide, including the areas of water, seed marketing, and post-harvest practices. Schaefer says much could be done with a successful Doha round.
An ambitious Doha agreement would reduce or eliminate tariffs and other barriers, as well as market-distorting subsidies for agriculture goods. Now is the time to lift trade restrictive policy measures such as export restrictions. While they are designed to increase short-term food availability within countries, they generally have just the opposite effect when these policies take food off the global market, drive up prices, and isolate farmers from market signals. That affects their ability to meet demand.
Next week's summit could be contentious. In advance of the meeting, the UN Food and Agriculture Organization issued a paper to participants that suggested increases in biofuel production is a main cause for higher food prices. The paper says, quote, "Biofuel demand is the largest source of new demand in decades and a strong factor underpinning the upward shift in agricultural commodity prices." But Schaefer says the benefits of biofuels outweigh the cost.
We think it's an important initiative, and while people do have some concern, I think we can point out the facts here, not the emotions, but the facts, that this is not distorting the global price of food, and it's an important direction we need to go.
The UN Outlook report claims that the benefits of biofuels to energy security, the environment, and economy are modest at best. South Korea says it will go ahead with a much-criticized deal to resume U.S. beef imports. Seoul says it has finalized new quarantine rules, and they will go into effect just as soon as they are published in a government journal in a few days. The new rules call for South Korea to import nearly all cuts of U.S. beef without restriction. The National Corn Growers Association and Grocery Manufacturers Association had blunt discussions yesterday over the food versus fuel debate. Stuart Doan reports.
It was the first meeting between the corn growers and the grocery manufacturers since GMA's high-dollar PR campaign to blame corn, ethanol, and American agriculture for rising food prices was exposed on May 14th. NCGA CEO Rick Tolman used the words tense, tough, and candid to describe the tone of the hour-long discussion.
What they told us is they're very firm in their position. They're going to intensify what they're doing. They don't believe it is demeaning to farmers. They're focused on the policy, the biofuels policy. We told them we respected their right to disagree on biofuels policy, but we didn't like some of the tactics in dealing with some of the anti-environmental issues with respect to farmers and trying to portray farmers as being insensitive to the hungry poor.
The Grocery Manufacturers Association declined to comment on the meeting. Stuart Doan, Washington.
And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Farmers around the Midwest are under the gun this month to make an economic decision about fungicide applications. Todd Gleason has more on why it is really still their call and a guessing game.
Last year, corn farmers in Illinois had more fungicides flown on their crop than ever before. A lot of it was done not to protect the crop from disease, but to get the assumed yield boost. Data collected from 12 U.S. states and Ontario suggests that only happened in a way that would pay for the application 38% of the time last season. And mostly it happens when the fungicides are doing what they're supposed to do, says University of Illinois Extension plant pathologist Carl Bradley.
To get the most consistent yield increase from a fungicide, you really need to look at disease. And that's, if we look at our regions across the state last year, Northern Illinois is where we saw the best returns from a fungicide, and that's really where we had the most moisture in the state. And moisture leads to disease, so that's really where we saw the most disease in the state as well.
The lesson here is to only call in the plains to spray a fungicide when a disease is present. The problem is dealers have asked farmers this year to prepay for the fungicides and the plane in order to guarantee availability. And the deadline to recall that payment will come sooner than a farmer will know if a disease problem is present in a cornfield.
Yeah, that's true, and it's unfortunate, but it's kind of the way the system's working right now to be able to book somebody to be able to spray it on and to secure chemical. But they are going to have to make a decision before they really know what kind of disease pressure we're going to have. There are some, I guess, some basic risks, risk factors that the growers can consider. These are things like if they're planting corn on corn, the disease risk goes up. Susceptible hybrids, some growers do plant some hybrids that may have a lot of yield potential, but they may be more susceptible than others to diseases like gray leaf spot. And late planting actually can increase the risk for disease.
And doesn't that figure? The one factor farmers cannot control that has the biggest impact on the development of fungal diseases is the weather. It has already pushed the planting season back, but we cannot predict if the rains will continue to fall into the month of July. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now for our cash grain analysis is Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op in Ludlow, Illinois. Good afternoon, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
What kind of planting progress are folks making in your area?
We were in an area that has been wet and has been slow. I would say before yesterday, we were only 50 to 60% planted on corn, a wide variety in there, but some people hadn't started. they've been pushing the envelope and mudding stuff in the last 2 days. Watching the weather forecast, watching the weather. We've been getting more phone calls at our elevators today from guys from the tractor saying, what's the radar look like? How far away is it than anything else? What I'm not sure is yet is how much we've been able to accomplish in the last day and a half. My suspicion is if we get a rain tonight and then a couple more next week, effectively we're done with corn.
And so what will producers do at that point? Will they go ahead with the preventive planting or look for soybeans?
Oh, I am not sure yet. There's a strong tendency with the farmer to try and put something in the ground. So that would be, I think we'll see a bias to do that, but we'll just have to actually see.
And we've talked a little bit about the difficulties of getting the crop in the ground. What about emergence, and are the stands looking good that have gotten into the ground, and are producers perhaps talking about replants in some places?
Actually, I saw some planters this morning when I was driving around doing some replants out there. Stands are spotty. So variable depending on what the soil was like, what rain cloud we'd been under, whether you got a light rain and was able to come through, or a pounding rain that crusted it, and whether they were to get back in, whether they could get in and hoe the crop or not. So a lot of variety. In general, I would say we probably don't have the stands that we had the last 2 years. I mean, we just had excellent populations the last 2 years. Part of it is we're so late right in here that it's hard to tell on a lot of fields yet. Where we're at on stands. Go 15 to 20 miles any direction from Paxton. I think you have better stands and definitely a lot further along on the progress.
And then I guess I would think that the soybeans are not in the ground at all, right?
Again, spotty on that. We have some beans in the ground. The producers who were real aggressive on planting corn and were done had an opportunity to go in and plant a few beans, but we're not very far along.
Let's talk about the basis. What did you make of the little mini rally we saw this week?
Interesting to see. I'm glad to see some continued demand out there. I still am concerned on corn basis, the fact that we're shipping corn, but we're not, how do I put this, we're selling a lot more corn than what we're shipping. We're lagging USDA pace on the actual shipments. It looks like if selling does dry up, though, we see some basis pops to try and keep it going again.
And are producers then pretty much slamming the door on what they got left? Or?
Yes. Yeah. We saw very, very little activity this week. Now, you look at it in the perspective of where we are, as I had probably had more people checking on contract cancellations if they couldn't get their corn put in the ground than in selling additional bushels.
And do you have a sense then for what prices might pry this old crop out of producers' hands?
I think right now it's actually, well, nothing happens unless you see new contract highs. They've been good scale-up sellers. There's not a big percentage left in their hands to sell. And part of it's a sense of time. I have people wanting to bide some time and get through pollination and see what things look like then.
Very quickly, your prices.
We are at $5.60 in Paxton for corn, $5.82 for new crop, $13.39 old crop beans, and $12.70 new crop.
Thank you very much, Bruce.
Thank you.
That's Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op, and he is located in Ludlow, Illinois. It's National Mint Julep Day. The origins of the mint julep are clouded, but the first appearance of the mint julep in print came in a book by John Davis, published in London in 1803. But the recipe did not specify the use of bourbon. The mint julep became the signature drink at Churchill Downs in 1938. It was first served in a souvenir glass for 75 cents. On this day in agricultural history in 1783, the first daily American newspaper was published in Philadelphia, the Pennsylvania Evening Post. By the way, the Declaration of Independence's first appearance in a newspaper was in that publication. In 1834, Nancy Johnson received the first U.S. patent for an ice cream freezer. The freezer had a revolving shaft with two curved wings to move the cream. The ice cream tub itself also turned. In 1864, Johann Bodmer died, a Swiss mechanic. He established a small factory in 1824 that made the process from carding to spinning wool continuous. The first-of-its-kind machinery was widely adopted in England and the U.S. and is regarded as having revolutionized the industry. And in 1899, George Cook patented an automatic fishing device. The device featured a trip lever activated by tension on the fishing line, which would also ring an alarm gong and take up the line on a spring drive reel. And that's this day in agricultural history. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for our look at the agricultural weather is Steve Hilberg of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Urbana, Illinois. Good afternoon, Steve.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Looks like an active weather pattern is in store across the Corn Belt this weekend.
Yeah, it looks like the active pattern is going to be not only this weekend, but into next week as well, as far as rain and or shower and thunderstorm chances are concerned. We are more immediately concerned with the system moving through today and tonight, which has brought quite a bit of rain to parts of the Corn Belt, over up to 5 inches of rain in Iowa overnight, and some heavy rain in northwestern Illinois. So once we get through tonight with any severe weather and the front going through, we actually should have a pretty nice day Saturday and Sunday across Illinois and Indiana. But the front that's going through is going to stall out along the Ohio River and then be oscillating north and south next week, and that will bring us almost a daily chance for showers and thunderstorms somewhere in the two-state region. And so we won't be totally in a dry regime by any means. The good part is we should be warmer than we have been the last few weeks.
And it is all about net drying after what has been a cool and wet spring, Steve. Are we looking for net drying to occur in the next 6 to 10 days?
Well, I think in some areas, yes. The upside is we're going to have warmer weather with temperatures probably at least this next week around 80, perhaps the low 80s most of the time in much of the region. That will have some southerly winds and sunshine with it. So areas that don't get much rain from the occasional showers and thunderstorms should see some pretty quick improvement. Those areas that are pretty wet and get some rain will be a lot slower to improve.
Are we going to modulate into something more normal than it has been in May?
It looks like over the next couple of weeks that basically the first 2 weeks of June are going to be more typically June than our weather has been in May, as far as being a typical May. Temperatures should be near to above normal. It looks like we'll be in more of a southerly flow. It looks like there's some sort of a pattern change occurring. We've had this large trough of low pressure aloft over the eastern, northeastern U.S. and Canada the last week or to 10 days, and that's what's kept us so cool. It looks like we'll be under more of a ridging situation, which means warmer weather, but we'll keep those chances for showers and thunderstorms. But I think in general, I think the growing conditions should start improving, and we should start building up those growing degree days.
With 1 day left until the end of the month, what do the statistics reveal about May?
Well, I think it just pretty much confirms what everybody was feeling. They'll be glad to be done with the month of May. Temperatures across Illinois generally 4 to 5 degrees below normal for the month, and rainfall will be generally anywhere from normal to 150 to 200% of normal across the state, with the heaviest amounts in southwestern and northwestern Illinois, but virtually the whole state got plenty of rain in May, probably too much in most areas, considering what we had prior to that, but generally a very cool and wet month.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, Dave.
Steve Hilberg of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, and that's today's Closing Market Report. Remember, you can listen to all of our agricultural broadcasts on the web. Go to WILLAG.org. This is Dave Dickey.